following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Get into it. Came from the radio. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I have Charlie Saladino sitting next to me.
How's everybody doing tonight?
I have my good old friend Andre Exume sitting across from us.
Hi, how are you doing?
And I have old Dr. Tom Ross sitting in the booth helping us out.
So right.
And Herman Sinertia is actually supposed to be coming in today, so unless the aliens pick him up along the way, he should be here shortly.
And I do believe he changed his underwear, so he's within contractual rules.
Oh, yes, he has to wear clean underwear to the show. So if anybody is having trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com and listen to us on live audio streaming. Also on the GBB website, you can also see us on the webcam, which is on right now, taking pictures of us in 10-second intervals. So we're actually waving right now, sort of. And the phone number here is code 631-888-8811. So let me just take it away with the news. Let's see. Oh, for those Pee Wee Herman fans out there who missed his awesome Broadway show, the Pee Wee Herman show was recorded and it's going to be on HBO the week of March 19th. So check your local listings and you can see the performance there. Now, I know Andre did go to see the Pee Wee Herman show.
Yes, and I didn't care for it. I wasn't a fan.
One of my favorites, Pee-wee's Big Adventure. One of my favorites.
Yeah, I love that movie, but as far as the TV show, I never watched it. You know, like all that humor, like it wasn't for me. It was definitely for Mark.
But and everybody else who was there enjoyed the performance. There, so you know, check your local listings for time. But it'll be the week of March 19th, which is only a few weeks away. Okay, let's see. Ooh, speaking of old products coming to be new,
Mr. Segway.
An Expendable sequel is in the works, and Sylvester Stallone will not be directing. He will reportedly have a hand in picking who his new replacement will be.
Will he be in it?
Yes, he will be in it, but he will not be directing it. He'll be writing it, of course. Although, technically, he really didn't write the first one, from what I understand. He just called up his friends and said, hey, we're going to be in a movie. I don't know what part you're going to play, but come on, let's make this movie.
Yeah.
And he will have no word yet as to which actors will be reprising their roles or which new characters will be joining them. I remember Van Damme turned him down. He actually asked Van Damme to be in the movie, and Van Damme said no. It was too lowbrow for him.
Van Damme?
Van Damme said that. It was too lowbrow.
What has he done lately?
I know he's doing like direct-to-DVD movies, but nothing important.
Wow, how pompous of him.
So did you see that DVD movie with him in it, Van Damage or whatever?
Oh, JCVD? Yeah, I have not seen that yet. That was his last big movie theatrical release where he played himself, an out-of-work former action star. He wound up going to a bank and people robbed the bank while he was there. And they thought that he was robbing the bank. So it was a kind of an action drama comedy type thing. And that was like 2-3 years.
And The Expendables is not good enough for him.
That's what he said, yeah.
What a pompous man.
picky.
Yeah.
Let's see. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
I thought you were going to take a sip.
I was going to drink first.
Speaking of another movie property coming back to life.
Mr. Segway.
GK Films announced its plan to launch a new Tomb Raider movie, and it appears that Angelina Jolie will not be involved. Producer Graham King, I guess that's what the GK stands for, whose credits include The Departed and The Town, announced that the first film in a series reboot is aiming to hit theaters in 2013, unless John Cusack is right. And he says it will create a daring new adventure for the young and dynamic Lara Croft. When asked about her lack of involvement, Angelina Jolie says, I just don't feel like I was needed to, because I felt very happy with the last one, which was kind of the one we wanted to do. The first one kind of frustrated us because we were trying something new. The second one, I felt like that's kind of how I wanted to do it, and I don't feel like we need to do another one.
Did you see on the DVD the special effects? She really busted her chops for that movie.
I did not see the special effects.
Oh, my God. If you get a chance, look, all the training she did. And she's actually on that horse, riding it, shooting those shotguns.
Yeah, she was doing a lot of her own stunts and everything. And that's the only movie that I ever found her attractive in. I've never found Angelina Jolie attractive except in the Tomb Raider movies.
Yeah, I like her in Hackers.
Go ahead.
I like her in Hackers.
Yeah.
One of her first
Hackers
movies.
One of her first. Yeah, yeah. I was going to say that. I think you need to see your doctor now.
So I guess, yeah.
Nah, I'm just kidding. We all have our own tastes.
Yeah, it was just weird how everybody was always clamoring over her, and I never found her attractive until that franchise of movies. That's just one of those things. Let's see. Moving along. Two new posters from the movie X-Men First Class has started to circulate, and the negative feedback almost instantly followed. The reason for it is this. The posters are just silhouettes of the previous incarnations of Professor X and Magneto, which was played by Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart. So it's just a blackout cutout of them, you know, on a white background. And they have the current actors who are playing in a new movie with their faces plastered on in the silhouette. And they just happen to put their faces right on their crotch of the silhouettes.
Chintzy, chintzy, chintzy.
Yeah, that's... And somebody proved that.
Yes, they thought that it was genius.
Wow. Okay.
So, probably the same person who approved in a ad for the convenience of the telephone, a woman talking on the phone while feeding her baby and not noticing there's a nice big fat spider sitting on the spoon.
There you go.
So what exactly is wrong with the poster?
What's wrong with the poster? Well, let's see. Let's take it apart. They decided to use silhouettes from a movie that was previously released. So they're using, you know, the earlier movies, and it's just a black silhouette, like, you know, a guy crossing the sidewalk or something. And they stuck the current actor's face, the new actors are going to play Professor Xavier Magneto, right on the crotch area of the silhouette. That's what's wrong with it.
Could you imagine?
And the thing of it is whatever graphic designer designed that probably got several thousand dollars for it.
Yeah.
Whereas if you'd done that for any commercial art school, your college professor would have gently taken you aside and said, son, I'll pass you in a class, but you got to make me swear me an oath that you'll never try to get a job in it. I've got a duty to the profession.
And do you realize how many lines I have right now, but because of the FCC, I'm shutting up?
speaking of good ideas turn bad,
Mr. Segway,
the New York Times has just reported that Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark will undergo an overhaul that will shut it down for several weeks, causing a 3-month delay in its opening date. It was set to open up March 15th. Now it is not. It's going to be pushed for 3 more months.
You know, my daughter's kids are going to be old, and the story's still going to be the Spider-Man play is delayed once again.
Yeah, and I understand the original director and writer is just walked off the project.
That might be one of the reasons. Let's see. The show now in its sixth delay. This is the sixth time they've held it back, the opening release. They'll be holding new rehearsals and will use the time to give the remaining cast members, whoever's left over, a break from previous performances. However, a spokesman for the show says that the production is not confirming any reports of a shutdown. That doesn't mean they're not going to be any. They're just not going to confirm that there will be a shutdown for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
All that and 3 or 4 OSHA citations in the last week as well.
And it was.
Can you say jinxed production? Ooh. I knew you could.
Yes.
But they're still pushing for it. I got to admire their determination. That they just keep on, they're just going through, and they're just going to keep on going it until, I don't know, a bomb is going to go off in the theater or something. They're just going to go for it.
Well,
they spent $65 million on it, so You gotta get something.
Is that why? Because of the $65 million?
I think because of the $65 million, yes.
Well, there does come a point where you're throwing good money after bad. Near as I can tell, the next step beyond this is to sacrifice a chicken at midnight in the middle of a crossroads.
What was that? Major League, when they had to sacrifice the chicken on the field, and they went and got the Kentucky Fried Chicken instead, right?
Pedro Serrano?
Yeah, yeah. Who was trying to be David Palmer in the 24 series. Yeah.
Well, weren't they skitsing out, they gave him like a frozen chicken or something.
Yeah, they got like the fried chicken that has.
Yeah, they gave him the fried chicken. Yeah, that was hysterical.
So I just say, you know, just keep on going until it's. I want to see how bad it's gonna get. That's my interest in this now.
I hope somebody has the good sense to make a movie of the future and have that article in it, like Spider-Man play delayed once again. You know.
This is like maybe this is like the producers, where they're purposely making it a bad film so that way they won't lose their money for the backers, right?
That's right.
All right, so
they got Bialystok and Bloom doing the.
So speaking of Spider-Man,
Mr. Segway,
the highest graded copy of Amazing Fantasy 15, graded at a 9.6 near mint, which featured a debut as Spider-Man. Has sold in a private transaction for $1.1 million.
Hassan, this is for you. That's crazy, and the guy's stupid.
It's actually funny. I was listening to last year's show around this time, and we had just reported that the other book had Superman. Sold for $1.5 million.
Yeah, action number one, featuring the debut of Superman.
Yeah. This by far is the highest price paid for a Silver Age comic. It is also 1,000,000,000% increase from the 12-cent cover price that whoever paid for it. And this copy, which is the highest grade of this book known to exist, is the only copy in that grade. So this means this is the best only copy of the Spider-Man Amazing Fantasy 15. Previously sold was for $227,000 in 2007, and it was a 9.4 graded. So this is a 9.6, which is 0.2 better. The broker for the sale was ComicConnect.com, who also auctioned off the other action comics, which sold for $1.5 million last year. Wow. So these guys are making a profit.
You mean that's a profit, 12 cents to 1.
Well, I mean, the company that's brokering these $1 million deals, they must have some type of in for someone to pay these kinds of crazy amounts of money for a comic book. And the thing is, for this for the comic graded books, they take it to a special company and they grade it, and then they put it in a bag, they seal it, and then they put it in a case and they lock it. So you paid $1.1 million for this book, and you can't open it without it decreasing in value. So that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of, to buy something that you can't even appreciate.
Well, obviously, it's done just for investment value.
I guess, but it's possible that, you know, it's one of those like the art, when they switch to art paintings, that they can actually take the comic and just put the cover on it, and you'll never know because you can't open it without losing the value.
And it's amazing that the Mona Lisa doesn't have to be put away like that and sealed up, and it's been around for a while.
Well, there, matter of fact, there are a lot of art treasures that are owned by, quote, private collectors who they just go straight into a vault and no one looks at them again until the guy decides to make some money off it or get a tax break by donating it.
Yeah.
So you're saying that you don't have any comic books that you never open, it's nice and sealed, and you know, like, and you never touched it?
I have one comic. It's worth $75.
Death of Superman.
The Death of Superman. However, I did buy a second copy and I read it, so you know, it's not same thing.
I did that with all the TV guides that came out with all the, like, the Beatles,
right,
and the Elvis. I bought two of each, and I read one, and I put the others away. God knows why.
But you weren't going to pay $1 million for it, right?
Not at the time. I don't know about now, but what do you got on you? I don't know.
What's the highest would you pay for something like that? I mean,
for a comic book?
Well, I mean, just for anything of nostalgic value of you know, would you pay a couple hundred dollars?
Well, depending on my meat. See, I have priorities like food, rent, mortgages, you know, like that. Depending on my means, If I had a lot of money, I would have a lot more Beatle artifacts than I do now.
Okay.
And I have Beatle artifacts when I like bought them at the price they were.
Right.
And now they're away in a box until I could get a display thing. But I will display them when I get them.
So you're going to use it as a conversation piece. That's
right. Exactly. Exactly.
All right. So, but $1 million too much?
If I had $1 million in excess to buy something like that, no.
Okay. Just making sure on that point.
No.
All righty. Last bit of news. Speaking of comic book art dealers.
Mr. Segway. Yeah.
Okay. 30-year-old comic book dealer Aaron Castro, who owns roughly 19,000 comics valued greater than $500,000, was arrested for dealing methamphetamine. Feds say that Aaron Castro began to struggle with money because he would spend his drug money on comic books.
Wow.
So the comic book dealer was a drug dealer.
Yay. Well, he had to make his money someplace.
Aaron would go and meet buyers at local comic book stores to get drug money and then use the drug money the proceeds to go and buy comics.
Excellent.
So he goes on trial for narcotics distribution and weapon charges in May. So that's just the drug dealer is a comic book dealer. It's just
right. I don't know.
Well, it's funny how his comic book habit has taken into his drug habit.
I think it's hysterical. I think it's hysterical. But what are you going to do? I mean, we don't condone that, and I think it's terrible. But you see that all over. Now.
Really? You see?
I saw that like at least 15 times today.
Oh, was that the case?
On the way here, I saw at least 20. Anyway.
Well, what we're going to do, because Herman is in the building.
Terrible.
So we're
going to
take our break, get him settled in, and we'll be right back with you in front of the radio.
Close your mouth. You're going to catch flies.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music.
We'll have a lovely afternoon. Kiss the world goodbye, and away we'll fly. Destination moon. We'll travel fast as the light till we're out of sight. The earth will be like a toy balloon. What a thrill you'll get riding on my jet. A destination moon. We'll go up, up, up. Straight to the moon we two, high in the starry blue. I'll be out of this world with you. So away we'll steal in my space mobile, a supersonic honeymoon. Leave your cares below, pull the switch, let's go. A destination moon. We'll be high in the starry blue. I'll be out of this world with you. So away we'll steal in my jet mobile, a supersonic honeymoon. Leave your cares below, pull that switch, let's go. Destination.
Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And we are back with Came From The Radio Show. Mark Torres speaking, along with Charlie Saladino, guest co-host Andre Zume. I have Herman in the building. Say hi, Herman.
Winning.
And I have, you want to go with stage name? What was the name you wanted to use?
You have Mistina.
Mistina, she is also sitting here with us. So we're all ready to go, right? So this week, I was actually watching some old.
That was five ums.
I was watching some old movies the other day. I was watching some Three Stooges on cable, and I was and it was one with that they went to outer space. And they were in the Liars Club, and they said how they went and they met cannibalistic Amazon women on a different planet. And I'm thinking, like, if somebody saw that today with fresh eyes, they would think it is the stupidest thing ever. It wouldn't have the same value as someone who appreciated the characters from before. So my question to everybody today is, the nostalgic value of something, how important is that? Or should every new item be taken with fresh eyes? Because if you see something, I mean, is that what the Hollywood wants, is to have something come in, you know, and say, oh, it's a ripoff of this, it's a ripoff of that. If you come in with fresh eyes, does that make you a better person watching a movie or not? So we'll start with going around the table, so I'll go with you, Charlie, first. What do you think about the nostalgia factor, and is that important?
As far as fresh eyes go, I think that's what the definition of a classic is. If anybody could see it at any time, at any age, and still enjoy it, fresh eyes or not, if it holds the test of time, you have a classic. The movies you were talking about, they're a time period movie. So somebody comes in now, a young person comes in now and watches it, they're going, like Kentucky Fried Movie. If you come in and watch Kentucky Fried Movie, if one of you guys who are young watched it, you go, what? You know?
Right.
Right. So I think that that's what's going to determine a classic. So, you know, basically that's my thoughts on it.
So what about you, Herman? What do you think about the nostalgia value, especially since you're the person who's not too much, who's always into remakes and reboots, and you're always saying how they shouldn't do
Sounds
that
like
and come up with original ideas.
Are you talking about
For nostalgic value, do you think that's important, and how do you feel if you had seen things with fresh eyes?
What do you mean, like fresh eyes, like young people?
If you've
like,
seen something for the first time without any background information. Let me get a perfect example.
It's not going to hold up.
The movie Airplane.
Right.
That was a parody off of the Airplane disaster movies, and it's
Airport.
Actually based off of Airport.
Right.
Now, I had not seen Airport until many years later, and I'm watching Airport for the first time, and I'm like, hey, this is just like Airplane, and I'm laughing at this serious movie, and people are looking at me like, why are you laughing?
Yeah, because you're thinking
this is the part,
right,
this is the part. So
right.
My eyes weren't fresh, so I'm saying, well, fresh eyes, nostalgic value. Do you think that's important to a movie?
I think you should look at Airport first. If somebody wants to look at Airport.
Yeah, but if you don't know.
Yeah, well, do research.
But is
perfect example, the movie Drive Angry, right?
Right.
Where I talked about it to you, like, today, right?
Yeah. Like,
and I watched it. And I looked at this movie, and it says, this is a bad Roger Corman 1970, like, shoot 'em up, bang 'em up movie with satanic overtones in it. And that's a perfect Roger Corman in the 70s.
So that's the question. So do you think that having fresh eyes will make you appreciate the movie more because you have your background with that movie, so you already have tainted vision of how the movie should be?
No, I looked at it and seen Hollywood just biting off a lot of ideas from years ago, like ingredients, and they make up a movie and they present the movie in a different way and campaign the movie that it's going to be great, better than a sliced bread.
So is that a yes or no? Is it effective?
No, fresh eyes won't make.
Fresh eyes doesn't matter.
No,
Misty.
There we go. Well, in my experience, I'll just speak for myself. I don't know about anybody else, but I happen to find, I guess, the newer version of, let's say, a movie, the newer version of a movie or even a song, let's say. And I'll listen to that with fresh ears or fresh eyes. I'm like, wow, this is great. And then I'll find out, I'll discover that it was from something else that was original. And then it will make me appreciate the original one even more.
I like
that. Where I'm from. take for instance, I know y'all are talking about movies, but let's say a song, House of the Rising Sun. Mm-hmm. The version that I heard was by the Animals. And I really thought it was theirs because they did that song so well, in my opinion. And I learned that it was actually a folk song, a New Orleans folk song. So that made me more curious about where the song stemmed from, who's done it before the Animals. But it just made me appreciate that aspect and the historical aspect of the song all that much more.
So when a person does a cover of a song then, is that helping it or is it hurting it for a new artist to do something like, what did Britney Spears do a cover of? She did some... Yes, My Prerogative. She did that. I mean, does that make it a better thing or does it make it worse when she did a cover of a song?
Well, it doesn't make it worse for the original artist who did it. Well, you know, yeah, like Bobby Brown. Like, if a Britney Spears fan heard the song, I'm not particularly a Britney Spears fan, but let's say if they heard it and they're like, wow, My Prerogative, she really does that nasally thing really well. and then they discover that Bobby Brown sang the song, and then they hear his version, they might like it better than hers. But the thing is, as long as it gets the new fresh-eyed, doe-eyed fan to listen to or see the older version, the original version, I think that's what matters. I think that's what counts the most.
Well, let's take a step further with music. What about Whitney Houston when she remade the Dolly Parton song?
Oh, my goodness. Right? I love both versions
right.
of the song.
The George Benson song, what was that? The Greatest? Greatest Love of All? Whitney Houston.
Right.
It's the way you produce it.
It's the way you produce it, and right. she totally blew it out the water, because right. for many years, I didn't know that Dolly Parton originally did the song, or George Benson did it, because Whitney was just, like, incredible. But I think either way, it made me curious to see, right. wow, who was the original artist
right.
that...
Where did it evolve from?
Where did... Yeah, exactly. Right.
So is that true for you also, Andre, about where things evolve from and where they come from to find out that you see something new? Does it make you want to go back and see the original?
I don't think... I think for some people, like, seeing something new, like, with fresh eyes, you know, makes it more worth it, because... like Clash of the Titans.
Right.
I saw the old one. I loved the old one.
Right.
The old version.
Right.
The new one, I hated it. I thought it was terrible. I talked to somebody else who never saw the original.
Right.
Right. And they loved that version, the 3D and everything.
Right.
So, I don't know. I guess, you know, you do need fresh eyes.
But, for the most part of what I understand is a lot of times when people find out that it is a remake or it's something that's been done before, they tend to want to go back and find the original stuff. Is that the case for most people? Do you guys want to go back and just refresh your memories about if you see something, oh, they're going to make a remake of something that you don't even remember seeing? Do you want to go and mention that you want to go back and see the original again?
Well, you got to remember something. I was... pretty much there when the originals were done, so
you don't remember everything.
I remember everything.
Everything.
So I was there. No, in the course of my life, I've seen all these songs redone, and I know pretty much where they're from. I'm saying in general. Am I talking now? Shut up. I've seen all the remakes, and now, if a movie's out 5 years, they remake it already, so now right. everybody sees the remakes. But I'm saying in my lifetime, I've seen songs, I've seen movies, I've seen everything redone, and I know where they came from. And a lot of times that's a deterrent for me, because I see the new remakes, and I say, this like, for instance, The Thing.
Yes, they're going to make another
I
one.
Mean, it was nothing like the original. I believe the new one was closer to the book.
Right.
But people are so used to that original. And, you know, James Arness coming into that door and, you know, get on that track. We got to electrocute you and all that good stuff. And then they see the new one and they look at it and it's like maybe the only thing that's new is the only thing that's the same is the alien landed
the
in the
title,
snow.
The title
yeah,
of the thing.
Exactly.
So for you, wouldn't it be better to just dump all that information that's gone before to try to approach something with fresh eyes? You might be able to appreciate
it. Oh, yeah. I always look at the new stuff with an open mind. But you're so programmed in liking something the way you like it sometimes. You know, I hear songs from the 60s redone all the time. I hear songs from the 60s that were remakes of the 50s, you know, like case in point, the Animals song. And you get to, when you get to that point, you get to appreciate everything, but you also get to hate it if you don't, you know, you don't like it. You're so used to that new stuff, you know, the original stuff.
You have a... Go ahead, Rapal.
I was going to say that. Cut it out. You do this. See? Yeah. You do that.
Yes, I could see.
For the audience that is listening right now, I'm just pivoting the mic back and forth. Problem solved.
Because Harmon came in, and all of a sudden, my mic went to his mouth, and I'm sitting here alone. Thank you.
That did not sound right. But
that's right. Herman
had a very good point. If it's well produced, I think people are more likely to seek out the original version if it's really well produced.
All right, so what about something, let's say, I'm going to go with, like, Machete. Machete was a direct...
Machete.
Machete was a direct, I guess, homage would be the word for the old exploitation movies. That was purposely done. So would that be the same case with music that they played in an older style? And you think that would be more helpful? Or more?
That film was done because the trailer of... Grindhouse,
but
people were forcing them to make that movie.
The trailer was still done in the style,
right? But what I'm trying to say is, people keep insisting that the new remake and the upgrade, whatever, is going to be better than the original. The only upgrade that was really good and well produced was King Kong.
Okay, so not
Peter Jackson,
not right? Because that was like a homage almost,
right? Right. Not the Dino De Laurentiis remake.
God forbid.
All these films that are remade are falling by the wayside, just like the remakes of songs, a lot of remakes of songs. You know?
Keep in mind that some things simply lend themselves to remakes, others do not. One of the great science fiction writers once said that 90% of all science fiction is crap, but that's okay because 90% of everything is crap. And also keep in mind that any films from the past that you're likely to see today, the reason you're seeing them is because they have withstood the test of time.
I got a question for Charlie. So you brought up the thing.
What thing?
The movie The Thing. Thing.
Yeah. That thing?
Yeah, that thing.
Yes. Not Abbott and Costello. Shut up, Herm.
Okay. You saying that that Kurt Russell movie, that wasn't the original movie?
No, the one with Kurt Russell, no. No,
I got to go investigate right now.
Now you got to go see the James. That's what I'm talking about.
Andre, by the way, just to let you know, we've been Hassan'd.
All right.
Wow, hello, Hassan. How are you?
Hello, everyone. Hi. How are you?
Hi.
I like the show. I admire your style.
Was it a long time?
A long time listener, first time caller.
So how are you there, Hassan?
I'm great.
We are talking about the nostalgic value or watching things with fresh eyes. In your opinion,
yes.
Do you believe that watching things with fresh eyes is a hindrance or a help to enjoying a movie?
It can't ever be a hindrance to have fresh eyes on anything. The problem, a lot of times, the problem is, certainly the problem that Herman's having, is that he's very fond of the genre and the nostalgic movies that he grew up with, and
right.
He feels that anything that slightly mirrors those movies or has anything to do with those movies that are made in the modern day, anything contemporary, is an insult to those old movies.
I agree with Herman.
I don't disagree with that to some extent. Okay. I don't know why they need to make another Highlander or another Alien, or any of those other movies. I really don't. Cool. However, or another Thing, which was a great film. Both Earth versions, the original version and the John Carpenter remake. So I understand the situation. But if you have fresh eyes, a lot of times a movie or a film can lead you to the original. And then that gives more more prestige to the original, and then people appreciate it for exactly what it is, as opposed to what it used to be, or you know something unsung, or something that was overlooked or forgotten. So sometimes, yeah.
So Hassan, do you think they should remake Star Wars?
you know what? Whoever would decide to remake Star Wars deserves exactly what would happen to him or her doing it. So, yeah, you know what? As a matter of fact, I do. I hope they remake Star Wars. Look what happened when the creator of Star Wars decided to add sequels to Star Wars.
Yeah, they almost got him, but he was protected by his big barricade of money to stop them from getting him.
Hassan.
Yes, and the fact that even the sequels made a bajillion dollars
and
spawned a whole bunch of new franchises. But, you know, they were none too kind to him when he decided it was time for him to upgrade his... he didn't even remake Star Wars. He added new special effects to the original Star Wars movies and people lost their minds.
That's true. That's very true.
Hassan,
so anyone...
Yeah. You're right. I know I have a problem with the remakes and the upgrades, but there's a upside to that. They're keeping it alive. They're keeping, you know, when they remake a classic, they actually keep it in the public's eyes, you know?
That's what I'm saying. Sometimes it can help. Sometimes it could be a very good thing for that movie that you love, you know, to have someone remake it so that everybody... You know, goes, oh, this movie stunk, but you need to see the original.
Right.
And that brings a whole new, that brings the old movie, the original movie to the forefront again. And people start discussing it again, and hopefully it gets the respect it finally deserves. That's only a good luck scenario. There could be bad situations where that doesn't happen so well.
Hassan.
Yes.
Nice to meet you.
This is Mistina.
Thank you.
I wanted to say that I think that most movies, I'm not sure, I can't say, I don't have a database of movies in my head, but you could consider them upgrades from books, like old-time books and plays and stuff,
yeah,
you know?
Right.
So you're,
you could do that.
Yeah, so in essence, like you said... keeping things alive, keeping things going. I think that's probably most films that we've seen that, you know, since they stem, a lot of them stem from books.
Well, aren't there films out there that are bad movies that should not be keeping in the public's interest, yet they still keep on making those as well?
What ruined movies is video games.
You keep on saying
I'm
that.
I'm sorry.
But
it is. Yes.
No. What is your line of reasoning for that? Let's put it down here. Why do you think video games ruin movies?
Because... they have books, and most good movies are made from good books.
Well, isn't most movies like some Shakespeare already wrote it or something like that?
Most things that are created are from ideas, whether it be books or video games.
So you're saying that before Pong came out, movies were great. They were the best thing ever. Then as soon as Pong came out, video games done, movies
were
terrible.
Video games ruin the texture of movies. Everything's got to be... violent, shoot them up, bang them up, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, he makes a good point. So what it is it lowered our threshold. You know, something has to be happening every single, like every 5 seconds or so, or we lose interest. I mean, whereas before, you took the older movies, they take their time drawing it out.
Tom, let's go to the classic horror, Universal. Frankenstein.
They call that.
No, let's listen. Let's go to the classic.
I am going to listen to you, but you're going to listen to me for a second.
Go ahead.
They call that the Generation X syndrome.
Right. Okay.
Which basically, new movies came out, a new television. It started with television commercials and music videos.
Right.
Where everything had to be kinetic, and the camera had to constantly be moving around to keep the attention of the of us Generation Xers, and therefore, and so on and so on in greater succession, to the point where now the camera can never be static. The camera always has to be in motion. Something always has to be happening, or whatever the piece is dismissed as boring, too slow, or inactive.
But Hassan, so, George Lucas never moved the camera.
He moved the camera a heck of a lot.
If you watch Star Wars, the camera's pretty steady, locked down on tripod. They don't know what tripods are today. And another thing, let's take classic horror. All those classic horror stories were love stories. Actually, love stories.
Okay.
The Mummy, Dracula, you know. Really?
Okay.
Take it apart.
Yeah, well, the monsters were actually portrayed as, Well, be human. And go back to the original Frankenstein. The monster was a creature to be pitied. If you had that one step back like the audience right. did, as opposed to the villagers with the pitchforks.
Phantom of the Opera.
Right. The mummy was a creature to be pitied, trapped and serve an eternal damnation.
For the princess.
Right.
Dracula,
yes, no, and maybe. He was portrayed as being more the pure predator. Same with the Wolfman.
Good evening.
But even the Wolfman, the way he detested his curse, he didn't get a charge out of changing and killing the people he loved.
Did you just hear Dracula coming out of his coffin?
it's not time for his deferential yet.
He started off as love stories, and then after in 1980, they all became allegorical for drug abuse, drug addiction and drug abuse, and that's kind of what changed when they started changing the allegorical. Subject matter,
right?
Then the films and the storylines all started to change.
Well, look at the fly.
Recall the original vampire stories. All you had to do was kill the vampire that bit you, and you could be human again.
Right.
Now, after when drug addiction became so rampant and everyone saw how many lives it was destroying, now there's no cure for anything. Now it's all burdens that you have to live with, or it focuses on the destruction. Of the average human being or normal people that surround the monster or the victim or whatever, and the subject matter changed. So yeah, you're absolutely right.
You're missing one point, Hassan. Even you gotta
He's
go.
He's agreeing with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no, but you forgot. You've got one addiction, AIDS too. That's vampire.
AIDS wasn't an addiction.
Well, the remake of the Fly. When the remake of the Fly came out. That's when AIDS, they introduced AIDS. Like it was. No, really. You read up on it.
Sickness and AIDS and drug addiction all kind of roll into one. They're all. It's cyclical. It's all interchangeable. It's elliptical. So basically, the basic point I was trying to make is you do have a grand change of the storytelling format. In the 80s, it changed from love stories, an allegory of the human, inhumanity to man, and the death and destruction of the human condition, to everybody's normal until some jerk started taking these drugs and became a wolf and then ran around and started killing everybody. And if you would just conform and be part of the system. And stop being individualized, and stop being a monster, and stop threatening people with your difference, your otherworldliness, then everybody would be fine. And once their format changed, stories changed.
Like Charlie Sheen.
So what about
exactly like Charlie Sheen?
So what about movies like, let's say we've been talking about romance. What about romance? There's only so many ways that happens. You have the main characters, you have the wacky sidekicks. They get together somehow. Something bad happens. They break apart, and at the end of the movie, they get together. That's pretty much what all romance movies are. So does Fresh Eyes make it better or worse for that?
It's pretty much every romance movie is Cinderella. That's it. The end.
Well, also you have to take into account, too, that society changes around it. Specifically, if you're talking about romance movie, the role of women. You go back to a romance movie that was made like back in the 50s or 40s or 30s, they're simply the object being pursued, period, end of sentence. They're not allowed to make the first move. And if they do make any moves, they're allowed to do is a sort of stereotype catty type sneaking around the back type stuff, and usually the girls who do that the most are the ones who wind up getting slapped down for it, whereas Miss Pure Virtue, the man comes to me with his flowers and chocolate, makes it. But the same thing goes for comedy. There's an old saying in the business: comedy grows nothing but old. And because again, it's just, even if you have a comedy that's doesn't have anything topical in it, the society around it that made it funny changes. The best The example I can give of that was a few weeks ago I saw It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. When I first saw it back in the 60s, it was a howler. People are literally rolling in the aisles. You see it again today, and what's so special about it? It's a lot of recycled slapstick jokes. There's three female characters, two of which are housewives. They're so indistinguishable you can't even remember them 1 minute after the movie's over. And the third one's a stereotyped harridan bossy mother-in-law that you can never get away with these days.
But didn't they do that on Raymond?
I don't know. I never watched Raymond, so I can't comment.
Have the formula there. I mean, right. that's where formulas come from, and I think it's actually a bad thing to have a fresh eyes in that case, because if you have a formula, then the formula is tried and true method. If you watch something and you're already used to it and you already appreciate it, you'll go into the groove that you'll enjoy it more than if you're fresh eyes. You might not be able to get like half the jokes that are coming at you, for at least for comedies go.
Mark, you know what's the matter with the media and Hollywood and everything? We've seen it all. We've done it all. We're bored of. We don't have no more fresh ideas.
So that's it right there. If that's
why they're remaking movies every 6 months.
But if that's the problem with Hollywood, then having fresh eyes is the answer. Putting everything behind you and saying, I don't need to know any of this stuff. I'm going to go in here with no expectations, no nothing, would actually make it more.
No, you can't go to watch a movie with a closed mind.
You got to stop using the word we, because that's you. You don't want to see these movies remade. You think that all these movies are crap.
They are.
Perfectly fair.
Well, they are. That's watching movies with closed minds.
Not with closed minds. Insulting my intelligence.
That's the perfect example of a closed mind.
I understand your point, but the whole point I'm trying to make is that by you saying we and judging on general for the rest of us, you're making the same mistakes the studios are making by thinking people are too stupid and a clever movie. So you got to first you got to change the mentality of generalizing.
Right.
For everybody, and just like focus on the fact that you don't like these movies, and that the movies that you grew up with are the only movies you think are real movies, are good movies. We need to get past that part first.
I think you have a really solid point about generalizing, because Hollywood does seem to do a lot of that, thinking, oh, okay, I think if we just put in just effects, no content, lame content, and no storyline, people are really going to scream for it and flock to the theaters and everything like that. I feel as if they are dumbing down the audience, because I don't know if they look down on us.
Absolutely.
That's
okay. I don't know if they look down on the audience, that think that they're better, but it's very insulting to my intelligence. Like, I see a lot of movies and I'm just like, what?
They're not doing it to you personally.
Right.
Yes, there's a special section of Hollywood that's actually out there. They got a picture on the wall, and they're going right for you.
No. I mean, I'm not saying that that's what she's saying. I'm saying it's not. It's actually worse, because it's not personal. It's just money. People are trying to narrow everything down to the lowest common denominator so they can make the maximum return, because they don't want to offend anybody. They don't want to turn anybody off. They don't want to make people think too much. They don't want to make anybody. They don't want to give anybody any kinds of opinions that's going to take money out of their pocket, And you have to. Their mentality is that you have to make a whole string of cookie cutter movies that worked last year, so that you can get the same kind of returns this year that you got last year.
Or more.
They're all
concerned
about their bottom line.
I think it's very boring. I think.
Yes. He's starting already. Nicely done, Hassan.
Yes, well, yes.
So,
I'm very proud of Herman.
So let's take a look at the highest grossing movie of all time, Avatar. That movie had tons of special effects. But
that's called Dancing with Wolves.
Yeah, Dancing with Blue Wolves, basically.
And Pocahontas.
The story was been there forever and ever and ever. Last Samurai, thank you. Without the special effects, I think that movie wouldn't have anything to offer. But that's because I've seen it all before. So you guys, I don't know everybody's opinion on Avatar, but do you think that if you didn't know, seen any of those movies that we just mentioned before, would you have appreciated it more or less?
You can't say that, because they're there, the movies.
But that's what we're saying about open mind, fresh eyes. That's the whole point.
That's a closed mind.
How is that a closed mind?
It's a closed mind because, geez, I don't want to see, I don't want to know anything what came out in 1970 or 1950. I want to see this movie.
So having a closed mind about having an open mind is being closed-minded?
Yes.
Believe it or not, I haven't seen a lot of those movies that you mentioned that Avatar is linked to.
Okay.
I saw Avatar. I appreciated the special effects. I thought they were amazing, the 3D. And actually, what I got out of the storyline was something, you know, a message about the environment and about, you know, Native American spirituality. I mean, that's what I got out of it. So as a fresh-eyed person, I just saw the philosophy behind the movie.
I was just going to say that's the perfect example because she didn't see the other movies, so there you go. I was just going to say that's the perfect. That's what we need.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have closed mind.
I saw that picture as insulting the human race.
And the problem with Avatar basically is that you gotta. It's like a painting. It's all a visual movement. Avatar is strictly a visual movement. The theory behind that is if you have such grandiose visuals and stuff like and groundbreaking effects, you cannot complicate the effects with a complex story. So the idea is to give it the basest, most simplistic story that you could possibly come up with, and then, you know, hit the audience, allow the audience to absorb the visuals without having to think too deeply on what they're seeing. And even though that is insipid, It is basically probably one of the most basic theories of writing when you're trying to do some kind of try to break some kind of ground or come at something from a specific angle. Everyone suggests that you make your story as simplistic as humanly possible so that people can understand, people could appreciate the new ground you're trying to break. So Avatar, not necessarily part of that cookie cutter Hollywood is evil point of view.
So you're saying that they have to dumb it down for everybody?
They had to dumb it down so that you would appreciate the oohs and the ahs. That's basically what it was. Like, ooh, I've never seen anything like that before. And the story's easy to follow.
Well, for the record, I used to have very long hair. And it got cut short because I tried to connect it to a horse's mane, and that didn't go over too well.
You know, it's Hassan's right. It's like it's all the effects. It's just like a band with big Marshall amps, like a rock band, and they don't have to be really good musicians, but those amps are pumping that sound out, and people are getting like mesmerized by, you know, the power of
the sound.
Of
that band. Yeah, because of the power of it, because it's all in your face and loud.
Right, he's right.
So, well, actually, that's awesome. A good thing for music. If you have an acoustic performance, is that better?
More talented.
No, but for larger venues, sometimes you got to have, you know, fireworks shooting off and dancers and all
that
extra
stuff. Yeah, but you still have to have the talent.
So which would be better, having the full production for an entertainment show or just one person on stage by herself?
What kind
singing?
Of stage are we talking about?
Well, Madison Square Garden, any stage, a large venue.
Well, that was the whole idea that we're getting off the thing, but that was the whole idea with the Unplugged series.
Yeah, on MTV.
Where you listen to Eric Clapton Unplugged, you appreciate the songs just as much as the amped versions.
Right.
Yeah, and then a lot of the modern bands from the 90s when Unplugged was a famous show couldn't really do an Unplugged. Because most of their sound had nothing to do with musicianship. It mostly had a lot to do with being loud and the effect. And when you were playing an acoustic guitar, you really find out whether the guitarist is a real guitarist or not.
Yeah, a lot of music these days cannot be performed live. It must have a sound stage and synthesizers and special effects.
Absolutely. Today, especially. Today is no question. There's no good musicians out there today.
So we got 2 minutes left, so we're just going to go right around with the final thoughts. So since you're on the phone, Hassan, I'll let you go first.
Why do you cue me first?
Because you're on the phone.
I don't want to have a final thought.
Is that your final thought?
You never want to have a final thought.
All right, so I'll go inside. Charlie, you want to have a final thought? We'll start with Charlie here.
As always, whatever you like works. It's America. You have your own opinion. You like it. It's good.
Herman, yeah. Final thought?
I disagree. I'm winning. Gnarly. It's amazing how Charlie Sheen uses all the 1980 phrases.
That's
gnarly.
That's your final thought?
Yeah.
Too much thinking. Misty?
I agree with Charlie. Whatever floats your boat, you know, that works. If it works in your life and in your shoes, I say go for it, baby.
Andre?
I think a fresh look is good. You know, you need it for nostalgia. You know, if you want to watch a new movie, whatever. But that's all.
And Tom, you got a final thought for us?
Truthfully, I think fresh looks are impossible since we're all products of the culture that surrounds us. And even in the case of Avatar, it goes back a lot further than the examples you were given. It goes right back to the age of imperialism and colonialism and all those stories about colonial agents going native, the most famous of which was probably Heart of Darkness.
For my final thought, I would say that it does help to have fresh eyes, and that was what Hollywood is shooting for. That's why they keep on dumbing down things, because they don't expect you to think about what's happening before. But nostalgia is also important, because then you can enjoy, appreciate things more, and newer things, and then the older things. So that about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio. Join us next week right here on WGBB. If you miss any portion of the show, you can go online to www.itcamefromtheradio.com and listen to us on the archives, which will be up in a week. If you can't wait that long, you can always go on the places such as iTunes and the podcast plan. You can find us from there, and all the news items that we had today are on our Facebook page, and we will see you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.